Hi guys, welcome to the Tales of an African Princess in America. My name is Ozzy. Today we have another great love story. It's the story of love between a man and his wife, and a father and his daughter. And today I'm going to give you a chance to hear a beautiful story, and I've invited a special guest. I'm really excited to speak to him today. His name is Mr. Kendi. Welcome, Mr. Kendi.
Hi, Ozzy. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
You're most welcome. So one of the things that I found out was that you actually went to Babcock University, and I had no idea until we started talking via email. So isn't that amazing that you meet people down the line who went to the same university as you did, even though we're now live in different countries?
Yeah. You know what they say, it's a small world and there's that 5-6 degrees of separation. You know somebody that knows somebody.
Right.
Always know somebody. And yeah, it's a coincidence, but it's always happy to always meet people from your alma mater. So yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, so I'm so excited. But I'll give our listeners a chance to actually meet you properly. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Kende Pukwola, but Kende is a name for twins. And in Nigeria, we have different tribes. One of the main tribes is the Yoruba tribes. Mm-hmm. When you have twins, you name them Taiwo and Kende. So I'm a twin and I'm the second of the twins. So in Yoruba's, Kende is the name given to the second twin. So we are two identical twins, Taiwo and Kende. And generally, people call me Kenny because it's shorter and easier to pronounce. Yeah, I'm Kenny. I'm a husband. I'm a dad. I'm a web analyst. I currently live in London.
Well, pleasure to meet you, Mr. Kenny. So you mentioned something. You said you're the twin and you're the second one. Do you know what the time difference was between you and Taiwo, your brother?
Yes, my mom said it was 30 minutes.
Oh, wow. You took your time.
Apparently, also in the Yoruba culture, they say Kende is the older one. Mm-hmm. Fact that I came second because they say Kende sent Taiwo out to see the world is good. And then
I think I like that better. I really like that. Yeah, so let's just say that you're Kende for today, who came out second, but actually the first. Yeah, so but today our focus is actually about your great love story. And tell me a little bit about your wife. How did you guys meet?
Yeah, so my wife Tutu also attended Babcock.
Oh.
We were the second set in Babcock. So Babcock is a private university in Nigeria. And we're the second set. And at the time, the population in the school wasn't that much. We were about 1,000. So everybody knew each other. I mean, yeah, acquainted to each other. So funny enough, throughout our 4 years at Babcock, we didn't actually talk, but you know that this person went to Babcock and stuff like that. So went through the 4 years, completed my degree. I worked in Nigeria for a while. And then after working in Nigeria, I decided to move over to the UK to study for my master's degrees. So I came to the UK. I studied at Middlesex University in London.
Okay.
Apparently, my wife too studied in, but she was a set before me.
Oh, wow.
Then about 4 years, 3-4 years after we finished our master's degree, it was actually 3 years for me when I finished my master, 4 years for her when she finished hers.
Mm.
I went to a mutual friend's surprise birthday party. Mm. So the friend was Kemi. So Kemi also went to Babcock. So we knew Kemi, my wife and I knew Kemi, but I was closer to the husband because we worked together back in Nigeria. So on that fateful day, went for the surprise birthday party and I saw and I recognized that, oh, you went to Babcock, right? And then exchange details.
Mm.
And that's pretty much how we started. And it was quite fascinating seeing that we also went to the same university for our master's degree.
I think it's very interesting that you say that you went to a friend's party, because on the last episode of the podcast, you know, my husband and I were talking about, you know, where to meet your life partner. Someone had asked a question from our Instagram page. And one of the things that we said was, when people invite you for these things, show up. You know, I felt like showing up is just the first step. You know, imagine if you didn't show up, even though you guys had met at Babcock, you went to the same grad school, you still had never really, really met until that party. So I think it's really important that people kind of show up, but go ahead.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Because there are a million and one other things you could do, but yeah, showed up there. And then, yeah, exchange numbers, and that's how we started. And similar to you guys, it was a bit long distance, not as long distance as you guys, where one was in the States and one was in Nigeria. You know, it's what transpired was after we exchanged numbers, we started talking, we went for a first date. By that time, we hadn't started dating officially. And then afterwards, I got a job in one of the coastal cities in England. So she stayed in London and I moved to Folkestone. Folkestone is in the southeastern coastal area of England. So it was about a good 2 to 3 hours distance between us, depending on the transportation modes you take. So if you take the fast train, it's about an hour and a half. If you take the slow train, yeah, it's longer. But we made the effort to meet up every other weekend. And yeah, for about a year, that's how we were dating.
Wow.
Daily Skype calls.
Those sound very, very, very familiar to me. Do you remember where you guys went to for your first date?
Yes, absolutely. I came to London to visit her, and then we visited, we had a meal at Witherspoon. It's one of a restaurant chain. So yeah, we had a dinner after that. I just said, we can start dating. And yeah, she said yes. And yeah, that was the first date.
So it kind of sounds like you dated for about a year, a little bit of a long distance between the time that you met.
Yes, we dated for about a year, a little over a year.
Okay.
When I proposed was, about a year after we started dating.
Wow. What was your wedding like?
It was funny enough, because we were both here in the UK, so all our parents were in Nigeria and sorting everything. So we had it lucky. We didn't have all the stress of planning a wedding ceremony. So all that pretty much planned everything for us, because we traveled back to Nigeria to the wedding. We had 3 different ceremonies. We had the registry, we had the traditional wedding, and we had the church wedding. So it was quite a lot. But it was nice and intimate for a typical Yoruba wedding. There wasn't much people, and really enjoyed it. It was nice.
Well, it sounds like it was a beautiful ceremony, and I kind of applaud your parents for putting that together, because a wedding is a lot of stress. I mean, I feel like we could create a podcast to just talk about how stressful weddings are, but just having someone there to help you guys out, I feel like that was awesome of them. Like, after the wedding, you know, you guys immediately moved back to the UK, or?
Yeah, so after the wedding, moved back to the UK, got a place. And then we just decided we'll wait for a while before trying for a baby, just to have experiences between us. So yeah, we got married, moved into our place, because prior to the wedding, we didn't stay together. So it was a case of getting used to living together, and left it for a while before we started trying.
And so how long did you wait, though, before? How long did it take you to know each other well, before you decided to, okay, let's have a baby now?
It was about 6 months, because it's when you're moving together, and I'm sure most couples will say that, when you're moving together, a lot changes, you start to see it a little bit differently. So yeah, we just said let's leave it about 6 months or about a year before we start trying. I think it's always good for couples to just keep some time, because once children coming, it changes, the dynamics changes. So yeah, enjoy yourself for a while, go on holidays. Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Well, that definitely sounds good. I mean, a lot of people are listening to us and thinking, well, 6 months is not a long time. And I feel like this is not our custom as Nigerians. I mean, it's not the norm to get married and then wait, because it seems like when people get married, and I'm also talking from personal experience, it seems like people are looking out to hear, like, are you pregnant? Do you have a kid yet? What do you think about that?
Yeah, even from the reception, that's what they say, that, oh, congratulations, and in 9 months time we'll come back for naming ceremony. And I'm like, oh wow, we just got married, like, right. But yeah, I think it's the culture, and the parents are always trying to relieve their experience through their children. Okay, yeah, our children are married now. Next thing is, okay, we want grandchildren, and just relieve that parenting again. So they always try to put pressure on the kids.
I mean, I'm not going to ask if you had that pressure to start having kids, but do you have other siblings apart from Taiwo? Are there others?
Yes, so Taiwo and I are the first, and then we have 2 sisters.
Okay.
And
are they married as well?
The sister after us, the Idowu, is married, but the last one is not married. Taiwo too is not married, but yeah, it's just me and the Idowu that are married.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, so now, since this is a Valentine's episode, we're going to ask you a little bit about the romantic part of it, all right? So What was the romantic part like when you first got married? You know, a lot of people say that when they get married, you know, the romance is there, but as the years go by, it kind of fizzles out. Is that, you know, was that the case? Or do you find that your love grows stronger every day?
Yeah, it grows stronger every day, but also it takes work. You have to work at it. It's the process, because what happens if you just leave it, there'll be a lot of taking each other for granted. So you have to actively work at it. So, I guess the romance, we just try to rekindle it. So we go out a lot, we make time for each other, call each other, check up on each other, take active interest in what each other is doing, find out how work is going on, how you can encourage. I mean, you know what they say about the different love languages, about the affirmation, about the physical touch and things like that. You have to find out which one works, which one your partner which of the long languages your partner speaks, and then just actively keep at it. So yeah, for us, we actively try to have date nights and more time, just making sure we check up on each other and do a temperature check of how things are going, and then try to settle disagreements, because there were always agreements, try and settle it as quickly as possible.
Sounds good. So it sounds like from the couple standpoint, you guys are doing really, really well. And then let's talk about when you decided to have a baby, right? And so this was about what, a year into marriage?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what was the pregnancy like? I know it was the first pregnancy, but what was that like for you? You know, a lot of times people ask the lady, you know, what did you experience? Morning sickness? What was that like? But for you as the dad, just watching your wife go through all these different stages, what was that like?
Yeah, it was good. So it started out like 1 year, and luckily enough, she got pregnant quite soon, because she has PCOS. So she doesn't have regular periods. So we're like, okay, we prayed about it, and luckily enough, God was faithful, and then she got pregnant, and the pregnancy was the best ever, because at the point, I had a colleague that his wife too was also pregnant, and we always exchanging stories, because our due dates were similar to each other, and his wife had like terrible morning sickness and some cravings, like wake up in the middle of the night and say she wants suya from somewhere. But Switu's was the best ever. I mean, no cravings, no morning sickness. It was the ideal pregnancy. But for me, it was about a lot of education. I tried to educate myself, got a few books about what to expect at each stage. So the first trimester, second trimester, what to expect and what the baby will be at different stages. Got all the books. And it was quite interesting to see the biology behind pregnancy. And it was just that sense of expectation. It's a wonderful feeling. Yeah, I pray everybody that is married also goes through that process.
Right. And that's amazing. That's amazing. And amen to that. Okay. So, you know, she went through the pregnancy. Thankfully, it was very easy breezy, as you describe it. Tell us about the delivery, the day of when you finally got to meet your daughter.
Yeah. Funny enough, it was a case where we knew when the baby was coming, because initially we had an expected due date. So I had the emergency bag at the back of my car. My phone was on the highest volume so that when I get that call, I'll just rush down. But it didn't happen. So we went to the consultant, and the consultant was like, okay, we have to try a lot, get her to eat spicy food, exercise, just try and induce the labor, but nothing happened. And then the consultant said, if it's past 2 weeks, we have to induce. So it was a date that, okay, it has to be on this particular date, April. So we're waiting. And then the day came, and then she had to be induced.
Okay.
And okay, so yeah, when they induced her, we knew that, okay, yes, today is going to happen. And then, yeah, they induced her. And on 11:30, the 15th of April, our daughter Olivia came, and it's the most wonderful experience ever. I mean, I thought I knew love, but holding Olivia, I mean, love between man and a woman is different. You make the efforts towards it, you do all the wooing, you work at it. But love between a parent and a child is, I don't know how to explain it, but you hold that child and you just see yourself, and it's the best feeling ever. And yeah, when she came, I was in the labor room.
Wow.
I was the first holder, and it was amazing.
That sounds wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, so then you took Olivia home. I hear a lot of people say that, you know, they're so scared to take the baby home because the baby looks so fragile, you know, and they're like, I hope we don't break this baby. But what was it like taking Olivia home?
Yeah, it was good. You take the extra care, you drive at the speed limit, you take your time, you get home, make sure everything is set. So we've already set up our rooms, take her home and just make sure she's comfortable. And yeah, my mother-in-law was around to help out too. That was also useful, having somebody with that experience to help. It was quite nice. She settled in nicely and yeah.
So while I was talking to you, you know, over email, one of the things that you mentioned was that you later discovered that Olivia is specially able. Can you tell us a little bit about how you discovered that and what were the events that, you know, led to that discovery?
Yeah, so when we had Olivia, first few months went on nicely. She was feeding well. All the checks that the midwife usually do for the first few months went well. So that was all looking good. And then at about 6 months, we decided to do the dedication in church. I got my family around, my aunts, my grandmom was around, which was a blessing. And my grandmom there too. So my grandmom was there. And then after the service, we're putting her in the car and we noticed over a few days that she wasn't able to control the shaking in her hand. And we thought, okay, well maybe it's just a baby thing to do. So we didn't really know what was going on. So I spoke to my grandmom. I said, Grandma, look at what Olivia is doing. We've noticed this a few times. And she was like, that doesn't sound right. And I said, we go to a pediatrician to find out what's going on. Went to the pediatrician. The pediatrician said, oh, it's just a baby thing, but you guys just give it a few days. But I said, yeah. The whole thing with family, and said, doesn't seem right. Okay. And then the pediatrician said, okay, allow you to go and do a few tests. And then went to do the few tests, and then it transpired that the test came back and she had a rare genetic condition. So it's called 1p36 chromosomal deletion, and it's so rare that it happens in 1 in 5,000 births. So wow. Yeah, it's a condition that comes with a lot of things that you have to manage: developmental delays, seizures, heart conditions. But yeah, that's how we found out, and we took it from there.
You were listening to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please visit our website, talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com. You can also email us, talesbydrozy@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media on Facebook, Tales of an African Princess in America, on Instagram, African Princess in America. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a rating on iTunes. Welcome back. Okay. So, you know, you came home with your baby and then you had a dedication. And then that's how you noticed, because, you know, her hand was shaking uncontrollably. And I really want to applaud you for that, because a lot of times people notice certain things and they might go to the doctor and the doctor says, it's okay, kids do this, you know. But I feel like as a parent, as a caregiver, I feel like insisting about something that you're noticing, like you guys did, and even having them do those tests, even though they were like, oh, it might be nothing, you know. I think that's awesome. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And so because of the rarity of our condition, some things happen that they don't know. Like when the seizures start happening, sometimes we'll go to the hospital and we're like, oh, see, she's having a seizure. And the doctor will be like, that doesn't look like a seizure. But we're like, okay, this is a rare condition. Mm. In the UK, they know a lot of people have it. So we were having to be like a voice for her to say, you guys need to take these things more seriously. So like you said, you have to voice out. Because sometimes some of the medical practitioners are a bit arrogant and proud. If it's not something they know, they just try to brush it off and walk based on experience. But sometimes you just have to be a little bit more assertive.
Right. That's the word, assertive. Like, now that you found out that Olivia has this rare condition, how has it been? How old is Olivia now? And how has it been just caring for her?
Yeah, so Olivia is going to be 4 in April.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a journey. I mean, we thank God now that most of the medical conditions have, she has been able to overcome it. So thank God for that. So the seizures have stopped. All the scans of her heart and her liver have come back positive. So anatomically, there doesn't seem to be any problem. Her seizures have stopped. Her brain development is going to improve from now on. It's just the fact that because of the seizures she had early on in life, she's now experiencing some developmental delays, but it's just a case of taking each day as it comes. So the little things we take for granted. So recently she learned how to get up by herself from a lying down position, every normal kid is normal. They do that within 6-7 months. But for her, it was really an happy moment for Tutu and I to see her go through that process where she was lying down and then she got up by herself. Because it's come from a place where she was a really floppy child, where we've had a lot of physiotherapy, lots of massaging just to get her muscle tone up and running. But now she's fine. Her muscle tone is improving. She's all those little dexterity is coming back to her. She's learning to stand on her own. So it's patience, and most importantly, love. For anyone that has a child with special needs or learning difficulty, I'll just say power of love is amazing. It changes things. Take that child, accept it, and just love the child. I know there's a place of religion where people say pray it out of existence, pray what you want, but you keep praying, but also you just show love and you act in love. So we've had to go for like different therapies where we have to drive like 2 hours to take her to therapy for weeks in a row. But you just have to show that love and they respond to it. And that's what we've noticed with Olivia. You show her that love, she responds to it. And it has healing powers. Sometimes when she's sick or she's going through some difficult times, just showing her that love, that little cuddle, it's just amazing how we just change this thing. So patience and love, I think that's the key thing that I'll say has been really positive. And also taking all the medical advice. So they give you medication to use the medication. Don't say, okay, yeah, working in faith, use your medication.
I think that's so important, especially because of the part of the world where we come from, where sometimes people... I don't know if it's the interpretation of what faith really means, but I feel like sometimes people would rather go to a church and they wouldn't take any medical intervention at all, and they call it radical faith. But that's another thing for another day.
Believe me, we've had lots and lots of advice like that. Oh, you guys, why are you guys letting this happen? You have to take it by force. You have to okay, and then. Also, just a point to note is that, like me, I have a lot of family members that are in the medical practitioner. So I have a few aunts that are consultants, and my sister is a physiotherapist. Just to make people know that knowledge also comes from God. My auntie will tell me about situations where she's in a consulting room and she just gets inspiration that she knows it's surely from God. It's not something she learned in school, and she gives the instruction and it works out that, okay, it transpires, that instruction is what saves lives. So also to let people know that God walks through medical practitioners. So you can say, okay, I'm not using drugs. Sometimes some of the inspirations these medical practitioners get are from God. Right. So as much as praying, open, know that sometimes God will walk through the hospitals. You might need that operation. You might need that dialysis. And that's what God will use as opposed to, I'll pray about it, and by the time I wake up tomorrow, it's gone. It doesn't always work like that.
Someone listening to you right now would say, oh my God, he's so strong. All we hear in your voice is courage and strength and love and all these awesome things. But are there times when you feel like really, really down? Like, are there rough times? And how do you get through those times?
Yeah, definitely. There are rough times. I mean, you have colleagues, you have friends, you have other contemporaries that have children that are similar to yours, and you see the development children are going through and see yours. Sometimes it's disheartening. There's the tendency of trying to compare. Sometimes you feel bad. Sometimes Olivia will have to stay in hospital, like in the early days. Anytime it's winter, she always has chest infection, and once that happens, she's going to have to be in the hospital for a few days. And the hospital, they only allow one parent to stay. So it will be a case of either Tutu will be in the hospital with her, I'll have to come home, I'll be home alone, thinking how are they doing. Or sometimes I'm in the hospital, I'm with her, all the monitors and everything around her, and it's a bit disheartening to see, is there more I could do to help the child? Yeah, sometimes you get those situations where it's disheartening. But I think my faith, so my faith has also helped. It's situations like this that helps to build up your faith. You begin to draw strength from all the things you've learned from the past. So my faith has helped. And then just talking about it, getting support structure around you. I know these days it's easy to live in isolation, but my advice to anybody going through a similar situation is to reach out. So we have a few support structure around us here. So like my wife's cousin lives close to us. We have a few friends that live close to us. So in some of those days, you just go to them, just hang out with them, to them. Also, in our own case, because Olivia's condition is so rare, we've had to go on Facebook. So we found a group in America of children that had the similar condition. So we got active in the Facebook group. And then they recommended us to the UK branch of it. And then we got in contact with the families of children with the same condition. And we meet up yearly, where every year we meet up as a group where there are different children with the same condition. And it's always good to see the progression this child is making. But it was quite refreshing because Olivia was one of the youngest child with the condition there. So it was good to see children in their teens that had the same condition. So we said, okay, prognosis is looking good.
Right.
Teenagers with the same condition doing this. The support structure, is really helpful.
I'm grateful that you have that support. You know, you had to seek that support. And even when you got it, you were open enough to receive it. So it sounds like taking care of Olivia does, of course, take up significant amount of your time. As a couple, do you guys still find time to do certain things by yourself? Do you find that you're able to do that, or are you not able to do that?
Oh, we're able to do that. So when you're in the UK, with conditions like this, you can get respite care where they get somebody to come around and look after the child for a few hours. So we get that. And then also like the support structure we have. So we have friends that we can always drop Olivia with, and they understand our condition. They understand how to take care of her. And we still, like I said, actively do things to rekindle the friendship and love between us. So we do date nights, go to the movies, we dine out a lot, go for experiences, go to the theater, go and watch a play, things like that. We try to do that as much as can on a regular basis. So we are still able to do that. It's just about just having that confidence of, like in the early days, it was hard living out with people because we were like, well, will she be okay? But ultimately she was fine, and we just decided that, well, she'll be okay. And then
I was gonna ask you if you actually do stuff together, but you've just answered that question. You guys definitely still find time as a couple to do things together, and that's awesome. That's amazing. This whole experience sounds like one big major character builder, where your character has been strengthened by just the depth of love that you have to express on a daily basis. And I think, you know, that's amazing. But are there some qualities that you see in your wife right now that you didn't even know existed before this time? Are there certain things that you're noticing about your wife that you feel like, wow, I never even knew that she could do this or that?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, this experiences like this just bring out the best in you. Our organizational skills have just caught us. Like, I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know she could do that. So she's always on board, like all the appointments, getting things sorted out. Patience too has improved rapidly. Those are two things that I'll say, I've noticed that I've really
those are two strong things, and that sounds amazing. So it's Valentine's Day in a few days. What do you guys have planned?
Probably eat out. There's this Chinese restaurant that is close to where we studied, because we live close to where we did our grad school, and there's this Chinese restaurant that we've always been going to. The guys there know us, and we'll probably go there, have a meal, and then I think that's what we'll do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to say a few words to your wife, since it's Valentine's, and this episode will be aired on Valentine's Day anyway. So if you had to say something special to your wife, what would you say?
Well, I'll like to say, Adetutu, I love you so much. You've been a pillar, you've been a rock, and yes to many more years in happiness. And she's also expecting, so we're expecting our second child soon.
Congratulations, that's amazing.
So just to say that you're doing a good job, and can't wait to hold our second child and continue this happy journey together.
Oh, that's such a beautiful message, and I feel like this is the essence of love. This is the essence of the day. And this is a wonderful episode. This is very timely. And thank you for sharing your story with us. I like how you always say specially able, because in the past, what we'd hear is disabled. And that really brings a negative connotation. But I really appreciate that when we were talking via email, I noticed that you were always saying specially able. And that kind of rubbed off on me as well. So tell me a little bit about why you always say specially able.
Yeah, I guess the thing that just brought it to life for me was the analogy I used to describe it is like I went to boarding school for my secondary school days, and back in the days you get your provision set, and there was this biscuit they used to sell a while back, it's cabin biscuits. Yeah, cabin biscuit. And it's a biscuit that has like little squares of biscuit, and yeah, in a pack, you always get like maybe 100 within a pack. And to be fresh, what we usually do back in the days is you cut a square in between it and keep taking one at a time so that it doesn't get soft and you still get freshness. And I see life like that, like children, I see it like that, where in life we're just picking biscuits. Or I'll say children are like biscuits. You just pick it out of a box and you don't know what kind of biscuits you get, if it's a full biscuit or they will have a chip within it or it's not. So some of us will pick up a biscuit that has a little chip on it. We'll have children that are not like typical children, but they're still children. I believe God doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't give us more than we can be tempted. So if he gives you a child like that, be sure that I'll give you the enablement to be able to take care of that child. So it took some time to come to that realization, but yeah, once you get there, once you come to a point of acceptance, because like I alluded to earlier, sometimes you always think, oh, I have to change it, but sometimes it's just the way God wants it to be. Just a case of working with that knowledge, you know that, okay, yeah, this is my Lord, so I have a little chip on my biscuit, but I have to make sure that I make the best out of it, help the child reach their full potential, and yeah, you get your reward out of it. That's pretty much it. Just encourage people that some of these things just happen in life. I mean, Olivia's condition, like I said, happens in 1 in 5,000. Yeah, it's really rare, and we're a bit skeptical about like trying again, but at the end of the day we just say, you know what, we'll try again. And luckily enough, the few preliminary tests we've done pregnancy are sure that everything is going to be fine. So it's also good for Olivia to have a sibling, just to get somebody to play with. So yeah, and that's my take on it.
Great. That sounds great. What would you say specifically to parents who have specially abled kids?
Yeah, what I was saying is like what I alluded to earlier on is about love. Just continue to show them love. And it's difficult. It's quite difficult, firstly in terms of like the physical care and the extra you have to do. And then also about that mindset where in the world where we live in, there's a lot of comparison that goes on. You see other children and you start to feel some kind of way, but it's about showing love. And like I said, love, you'll be amazed at the power love has. So just continue to show love. Sometimes it won't be easy, but just continue to show love and you'll be amazed at the fulfillment you get out of it.
Right. And how about people just who don't have specially able kids, but just people who are listening right now and want to connect with you, but they just don't know how? What's the one thing you wish they knew about kids who are specially able?
One thing I'll make people know about children that have special needs or specially abled is that they're stronger than we give them credit for. With Olivia, I've seen her fight like nasty infections. I've seen her fight through like different surgeries, stronger than we give them credit for. And it just takes that belief. That that's why the fact that all the reports says otherwise, that they're limited in this, they're limited in that, they actually have more strength. And that's why if you look at things like the Paralympics, people that are not physically like, they don't have the physicality as normal athletes, but when you see them do what they do in Paralympics, it's amazing. We know when London hosted the Olympics in 2012, to turn out a privilege to get a few tickets, and it was amazing to see what people were doing. We saw blind soccer and they're playing soccer and they're doing skills that normal players do, and you're like, wow, for a blind person able to, they are scoring fantastic goals. So if you see a child with special needs or learning difficulties, don't feel sorry for them. Tell people, don't feel sorry for them. Believe in them, because they have the strength to to compensate for that, for what they're lacking.
Right. That's very true. That's very true. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, I feel so sorry for them. But no, don't feel sorry for them. When you see people who don't have, you know, necessarily have the skills that you think you have, don't do that. Alrighty. Yeah. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to share your amazing story. Like, this story has really inspired me. You know, I hope it has inspired our listeners as well, just to know that whatever situations you're served with in life, you know, you can make the most of it and you can do really, really well at it if you choose to love, because with love, love conquers all things. And so thank you so much, Mr. Kenny, for sharing the story with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, guys. If you'd like to send a comment about this episode, please follow us on Instagram at African Princess in America. Thank you so much for listening and have an amazing week. Bye-bye. Do you know that you can support this podcast with a small monthly contribution, as little as $1 every month? If you'd like to do so, please visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com. Thank you.